Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
JP has joined the show now as co-host. Hi, buddy. How you doing?
Hey, how's it going? We're doing that thing where you say hi after we've been talking to each other all day long, but it's what you have to do on the radio.
I know, trying to figure out how to intro you when you're doing updates for the first 2 hours of the show, there's no way to do it that isn't a little awkward unless we just address that we've been talking for like 3 hours now.
But I do like it, though. It's like a welcome to the show, like, hi.
You do like a big setup.
I do.
I love, like, there's a lot of people who it actually kind of annoys me when somebody wants a big setup but they can't say it. Total turn off for me. I have no problem giving someone a big send up. Just be honest about it. So, like, in my career, I've worked with people who are like, hey, don't make a big deal of this, okay? And then you get off air and they're like, why don't you make a bigger deal of that? I'm like, no. I'm Hungarian. I'm incredibly literal, okay? If you tell me what you want, I can make it happen. And so today, big welcome in.
I like the big welcome in. It's like you arrived. You made it today. We're here. Let's do this.
Couldn't have done it without you. Do you give any amount of bleeps that yesterday was not a pretty win?
No, not really. I said in the pregame, I thought it'd be a BOGO, a buy one, get one. You win that game, and then you got the game against the Giants. Now all of a sudden, we're 2-1. You lose that game, and then we have some problems. So no, Nick, I don't care about winning pretty, ugly, or anything in between. That was we talked all week about it being a must win. Once we actually got the game underway, it felt like a must win. And so it was so refreshing that they were just so dominant early. And I know it came down to the very end with a Hail Mary play, which would have been absolutely so deflating. But yeah, I thought this was great. Did you think? I mean, you had to have thought the same thing.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I think style points are so massively overrated. I think we have this image in our head that there's that every game Patrick Mahomes throws for 450 yards and 5 touchdowns, and it's easy to be a Chiefs fan. You watch a lot of the games, especially early and halfway through the season. There's a lot of, like, wandering around in the dark until Mahomes just kind of finds it.
Well, that was one of the worst games Mahomes has ever played yesterday in the regular season. That was his lowest amount of yards. Several different categories was career lows for him for regular season play.
Well, but, like, I think we do that with Kansas City. I think we do that with Baltimore. These teams that we've put on a pedestal, you put the teams on the pedestal. The teams that we do that with, we act as if they've never had to win a hard-fought game. And also, our perspective of what a pretty win is pretty dumb.
Okay, yeah, but the difference there, though, is that if Mahomes has a bad game like he did yesterday, you have belief that that's not going to be a continuous thing. You have belief that Mahomes is going to be Mahomes and a great game is right around the corner. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Watson right now, I think what we needed to see was him look decent, but there still is the belief any given week that you don't know exactly what you're going to get. So even though I agree with the idea that just win, the Al Davis just win baby thing, it still helped that we saw him play relatively well in getting the win.
See, that's what's interesting is the quality or the style points of the win always get attributed to the quarterback, whether that's fair or not. Yeah. And so, like, to me, like, okay, the you have zero momentum going for you in the second half and you get the safety. That's style points. You start the game out with your hair on fire, and Deshaun makes that play to Jerry Jeudy. He makes the David Lee Roth in the air to David Bell on the sideline. Like, those are style points, even if there's enough ugly in that kind of comes out in the wash a little bit.
When you're watching the game, does it feel like they're a real team or not?
The Browns?
Yeah, and it did. It did. That's all I need to know. Like, there's certainly games you have where you're like, oh, they relied on the defense once again. Like that Colts game last year where, and this isn't one where they relied on the defense necessarily, but Myles Garrett accounted for 17 points by himself. If all 18 points we had yesterday was Myles Garrett having 18 points and Deshaun Watson looked bad, then yeah, I'd probably be singing a little bit of a different tune. I can admit that.
I also think it's like the Steelers, though. Steelers fans are so negative about about the way they win, that they don't care that they win.
Well, that's because they know that they're dead in the water. They know that even though they're winning, no one's taking them seriously right now. They're 2-0 on top of the AFC North, and no one's like, yeah, Justin Fields. Go Justin Fields. I almost went JF there. I almost
you tried it.
That's not a nickname he's ever had.
Why do we do that? Okay, and I'm not going to sidebar the entire show.
Why do we give
Jay anything almost automatically
JP
becomes a nickname?
For me, always made sense because JP's a real name.
Yeah,
well, the little kid in Angels in the Outfield. His name is JP. It's a real name.
Okay, so it has a first name significance.
Yeah.
Which JF just doesn't.
No,
that just sounds like something you'd call like a.
No, that's just me
like
trying too hard.
Third generational hillbilly or something.
Why
like
does
that.
Justin Fields not have any nicknames?
He's not good enough to have them. Not in the NFL.
Ask Twitter. They believe he's more than good enough.
But no, I mean, like, that's a scenario where, and obviously, like, the Steelers, there's a 8-year thing. They haven't won in the playoffs for 8 years.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, we make fun of the fact they've scored, what, one touchdown in two games? Who cares? They're 2-0. And granted, at some point, you do have to continue to look better. So it is like, so it's not style points and how much do you win by, and more, are you seeing growth and trends in the positive direction?
Right. I agree with that. We needed a win, but we also needed to feel like there's belief there that the next three games aren't going to be a struggle because they're not the three hardest games we've ever played.
Well, and can I just tell you, what I really needed to come out of yesterday's game is I needed to be able to beat my chest going into a game with Daniel Jones, knowing that I have the better quarterback. And I do feel like yesterday did remind me.
Which is a very, very low bar, by the way.
No, I know, but here's the, no, but that's, Daniel Jones is such a low bar.
Like, there are guys at the park I feel better and more confident in than Daniel Jones.
That I needed to clear it. And he did. And I'll be honest with you, I almost think how well Deshaun played gets lost in the sauce a little bit, because in the second half, the offense slowed down. I don't think that had anything to do with him. That was penalties and drops galore.
Oh, Deshaun takes no accountability for that? Or
well,
none of that is
no,
put on his doorstep?
But I think he's in like third place. And honestly, Kevin Stefanski with a 3rd-and-6 call, I'm going to jam him up just as much as I'm going to jam up Deshaun.
Well, at some point, we got to figure out why Stefanski's back doing that thing where he's awesome in the first series in the first 15, 20 plays that are scripted, and then it seems like the whole rest of the game is a completely different game plan and what happened there. At some point, we'll have to have that conversation.
I agree. Also, to me, it's an identity thing, and I do think this is where I think this is the downside of analytics, and I cannot believe that I'm going there.
Are you anti-analytic guy?
No.
Am I doing a show with Mark Schlereth all of a sudden?
No, I am pro.
Football guy.
Pro working analytics into what is your personality as a head coach. And sometimes, and I don't know if it's because this is more of a thing with play caller Kevin or if it's more head coach. For instance, I said at the end of the first half, you're getting the ball back. You've already been the far better team. On 4th-and-3, that would have been a chance where I would have been okay with you taking the risk if it meant trying to put 7 on the board and being aggressive. Whereas at the end of your time where you're just trying to run out the clock, a boot call is an aggressive call.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
You're giving the opportunity to pass if it's there. But there are so many variables, and you know Jacksonville is going to just try and tee off because it's 3rd-and-medium. So like, How is in one sense, when you can step on their throat and maybe put them out of misery at the end of the first half there, how are you so conservative there? And then when all you need to do is not put your quarterback in a position to make that call, how do you go what I think is very aggressive? I know boot calls aren't usually aggressive on 3rd-and-6 with less than a touchdown lead, and all you need is like 2 or 3 yards and 50 seconds. I don't see how you go boot there. So, but that's to me the identity thing.
I think the call before the half is the outlier there. I think Stefanski was aggressive all day long. 3 for 3 on 4th downs. They converted more 4th downs than they did 3rd downs.
Yeah, 3rd downs. Yeah.
They had 2 3rd-down conversions. They had 3 for 3 on 4th downs. And it's fun to see Jameis out there for whatever that's worth. But like, they were very aggressive. The Jerome Ford handoff, that's a very aggressive play. I thought Stefanski at times, I thought he was in his bag, as the kids say on Twitter. He was dialing up all sorts of different plays and different looks.
I love the Jerome Ford call, by the way. But
everyone did. That was great. And what made it great is that the announcers right before it, what was it? One of the McCourty twins, was it Jason?
Yeah.
Jason's like, this is dumb.
Did you forget what he's doing?
I did.
McCourty twin?
I did. To me, they're all the same.
Do you know why I can remember? Because the names were Jason and Chris, and that's super easy to remember.
Good old JM.
Nope. Not a nickname, so it doesn't count there. But no, I mean, but I'll push back on you. I think he is, I thought he was aggressive for about half the game. And I think in the second half specifically, he turtled until the 3rd and 6.
Well, there were a lot of confusing plays in general, though, because neither coach could make up their mind on what they wanted to do. Think about Doug Peterson going for the field goal, and there was a chance he wasn't going to get the ball back. That I thought that was an interesting move instead of going forward on the 4th and goal. But then you turn around, and he does that what turned out to be like a punt onside kick thing is what he was calling it after the fact.
Yeah.
The hell was that? He just punted the ball a million miles up in the air and hoped that the Browns wouldn't catch it.
Also, how much time were they allotted?
But on top of that, though, if you just punted deep and then you stop the Browns on 3 straight, you're getting the ball back and in a much favorable position.
Well, but like there were multiple times where it's like where play was held up because the referees wanted to get the explanation right, which is fine. But I was like, how does that favor anybody but Jacksonville? Like they almost took too long to get the explanation together, and I'm surprised Jacksonville wasn't able to capitalize on it. That actually, you know what, the thing we have not talked about, the refs took over that game in the second half, and some of the holding calls were obvious, and I don't have a problem with that, but the tic-tac procedural calls, the alignment stuff, the four straight flags that we had, the wide orbit. Yeah, the different thing. The orbit motion, like, it was very interesting that that stuff was called then, and it wasn't called in the first half. That is the thing that confounds me about refereeing and officiating in the NFL, is it just felt like the weirdest timing when you cracked down on those things and when you didn't. Now, by the way, I thought they pinged Jacksonville at the weird time, too. It's not like it was – I'm not trying to claim it was anti-Cleveland. It was just the referees got super involved in that second half, and I think if you go back and look at the first half, there were some no calls there on both sides, so I don't know why they shortened up on the whistle there.
Yeah, I mean, you can call a play in basically any play, right?
Yeah.
But it's odd to me. It didn't feel like, I don't know if you watched the end of the Chiefs-Bengals game, but the Chiefs had the call go against them in the completion that Mahomes did make, and then in the one where he didn't make, then it turned into the PI. It was a face mask, and then it turned into a PI, and it's like, that was a tit-for-tat type thing going on right there. And I didn't see much of that with the Browns-Jags game. I didn't see that.
216-474-0092. We're talking about the ugly dub. Who gives a damn? The Browns got a win yesterday, and what stood out most? So we've covered a little bit here, but I'll throw that out to you. What else stood out the most to you about yesterday's game?
There were a couple things. Obviously, you talked about the idea of the whole entire every Browns fan you talked to was upset about Amari Cooper, and I don't get that. I thought Jerry Jeudy was great. I thought Elijah Moore and the connection with Deshaun Watson was also great.
You don't get why people were down on Amari?
I mean, I understand it, but he told you guys straight up how this was going to go. When he signed the extension, he said, there was no chance I was holding out. It was simple. I have to be in practice. I'm a guy that needs reps. I was never going to hold out because I need reps. And then he continued to not get any reps throughout the preseason. Didn't play in any preseason games. Missed a bunch of practices. It was always going to be this way. Like, he told you he needs the work and then didn't get the work. Like, this was always going to happen.
Does that explain the attitude on the sidelines?
Well, I mean,
explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first 3 grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
I think he's frustrated that he needed the work, didn't get the work, and now he's in a regular season and he's not looking that great.
I think he's making $25 million this year. I think he needs to buck up. What is a bigger deal right now, Amari struggles or Jerry Judy's big game? That guy in Cleveland saying, that's his name, I'm not just saying like that guy, that'd be very nondescript. That guy in Cleveland on Twitter saying, I think Judy playing good football here for us is a pretty big deal. Saying he was skeptical at first, but he's starting to think it was a good addition for the team. That's more where I am. Like, the big takeaways are I thought Elijah Moore and Jerry Jeudy were really good yesterday, even with the drops. And then we kind of say, like, the Amari thing, I'm going to reassess after the Giants game. But, like, I don't know how you don't come out of that feeling super impressed by Deshaun, by Jerry Jeudy, and Elijah Moore.
Yeah, Deshaun's really got this connection with Elijah Moore, too. But the Jerry Jeudy part of it is, I mean, that's fantastic. That's what you're hoping for long term. You just needed wide receivers that would stick. I don't find myself concerned with the Amari Cooper thing.
Is it because it's too early?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think it's probably what the voice in the back of your head is telling yourself as well. Are we jumping to this too early? Hey, listen, he's had 10 years of awesome production. Now, the bet the Browns made, is it fair to say the bet the Browns made not extending him is that at 30, they started to wonder if maybe he would start to fall off a cliff a little bit?
I also think they wanted to see what he was in this offense.
But I just feel like for the amount of years that he's been great and the different quarterbacks he's been great with, by the way, he's been great with Deshaun too. The first year that he was here, that Washington game alone, 100 yards with Amari, couple touchdowns. He was the only guy that consistently he's done anything with Amari. And so I just can't write it off after 2 weeks.
I mean, I would say Joe Flacco did some consistent stuff with Amari too.
I'm sorry. I meant like Deshaun Watson, like the only one he did. Like Deshaun's only connection he had was with Amari. He didn't have a 60-yard plus game with David Njoku. He never really worked with Elijah Moore the same way that people wanted it to. The only guy he consistently worked well with was Amari. And that's because Amari can work great with anybody.
Well, yes, but I think whether it's age, whether it's the first time in a different system where it's not on schedule throws, however you want to describe, whatever terminology you want to use, it's not as simple as go here, ball here, that kind of thing, or whether it's what he's coming out of. I just think, so 2 games is, I'm cool to say 2 games is early to panic, but you look at this, and I think it's fair to say, well, he didn't have a preseason. Well, yeah, but neither really did Jerry Jeudy or Elijah Moore. Well, actually, Elijah did play quite a bit in the preseason. But when it comes to attitude is one of my concerns for you, that I don't like to
see. Well, do you think that Amari, do you think he checked out? The idea that he was on the – because everyone told me he's too much of a pro. That's what everyone said. He's like Nick Chubb. He's too much of a pro. He's not going to be the type of player that is all of a sudden going to be in the trade rumors and then take that in such a way where he becomes disgruntled employee. Are we starting to see the early signs of that?
Yeah. I mean, well, I think it's fair to ask yourself
that,
if it is.
It goes south really quick if that's the case. Well, that was the roll of the dice that they took in putting his name out there and putting him in those trade scenarios.
They didn't put his name out there. Somebody leaked that and did them dirty.
It got out there, did it not?
Yeah. Oh, no, it did. And by the way, the Instagram story tells us that he was not thrilled.
He is human, right? Yeah. Think about it. The past couple years, all he's ever done is produce for this team. 1,100 yards in each season, 1,250 yards last year. And instead of getting the extension, like Jerry Jeudy ended up getting, who'd never appeared in a Browns uniform, he got we'll restructure your deal before the season gets underway, and we'll make it so you make $25 million this year, and you should be bowing at the altar and genuflecting for Andrew Berry. But it's such hogwash. I'd be so mad if I was Amari Cooper.
He's also on team.
I'd be so mad.
I don't think he has a right to.
Why not?
Because you can't go out there, you're going to business for yourself, which is fine. You can't go say, I want more money. I'm going to hold out in what is a contractual year going into that for you. And then when the team also looks out for their best self, you get mad at them.
Listen, I don't think he's quiet quitting. I don't think he's doing one of those things where he's just, he's out there, he's making his money, but he's not trying as hard as maybe he could be. I don't think anybody thinks that he's doing that, right?
I don't know when we're talking about eye rolls and big drops. Like,
if he's checked out, tell me he's checked out.
But let's play devil's advocate.
Sure.
What are the signs of being checked out? Not making the catches you're used to. Huge, huge missed opportunity on third down. And what's your attitude like? So maybe this is like the Jed Wills like gag reel that's on social media.
Sure.
Maybe they just took the 10 worst plays, but 3 times during the game yesterday, I saw Amari with some sort of RBF situation going on his face.
This isn't great then.
Well, no, but
if you believe that, that's not great.
Well, but that's, I am a believer that you can come back from this. But you better get back from it quickly.
Because listen, we work in a type of situation where there's a lot of egos involved, as you mentioned before. Radio's got a lot of them.
What?
Yeah, I know. It's your favorite thing. But we've seen what happens when egos get bruised and then people don't. And they check out. When they check out, they're space cadets.
Yeah, but like, okay, so do you think Ja'Marr Chase isn't going to come around in Cincy?
How do you get... Well, Ja'Marr Chase also wasn't eye-rolling either on the sidelines.
Yeah, you're right. He was just being told to shut the bleep up by his head coach because he had just cost his team 15 yards by getting an excessive penalty.
But that's different. That's an excessive penalty. I think that's a little different. That wasn't a That wasn't. I don't think Jamar's,
what Jamar's doing is so much worse than what Amari's doing. Like Jamar
knows he's going to be a Bengal for the next 5 years, 10 years, whatever it is. Amari thinks this is the last year he's ever going to be with the Browns.
Jamar had literally said 2 weeks ago, "You only got, I think it was like 3 targets. What's that?" And he said, "Ask the coaches."
Oh, but he knows his end game is in Cincinnati. He can't go full scorched earth. If Amari never did anything productive again for the Browns, you know what happens to Amari Cooper? At the end of this year, he just goes to a different team, and he is now a former Raider, former Cowboy, former Brown, and then former whatever team he joins.
I think it's weird because I think Jamar is being more unprofessional than Amari is. I don't even know Amari's being unprofessional. I just know it's one too many drops, it's too little production, 2 games in, and the eye roll thing is something to look at.
I don't know.
Jamar, yeah. If you're in Cincinnati, you better be on high alert. You're 0-2, and the guy is openly having to be told to shut the bleep up by his head coach on the sidelines. Whether or not you've got a long-term future there, that's a lot closer to going wrong than it is with Amari to this point.
I guess I didn't make too much of the eye roll situation.
And I think both are salvageable, by the way. But
well, that's what you said. You think you can come back from both. I think that they'll obviously come back from Jamar. The comeback for Amari is catch the passes.
Yeah, well, don't get Wally pipped by Jerry Jeudy and Elijah Moore because you're too busy dropping
passes.
Isn't
that the best thing for the Browns if 5 weeks in, if Amari is checked out, if Jerry Jeudy steps up and becomes the number one? Because he's the guy that's here for 4 years.
I would imagine Jerry Jeudy, Amari Cooper, and Elijah Moore all producing is the best thing for the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, but if we're going to deal with a world where Amari Cooper isn't going to be productive, the fact that Jerry Jeudy seems like he's ready to catch about as many passes as he can, that's not a bad thing.
I mean, it's okay. So now to take it one more.
Yeah. And by the way, we are playing with a very dangerous assumption that Amari Cooper is like checked out, that Amari Cooper is disgruntled, that Amari Cooper is like eye rolling and doing all this other type of stuff. Like, I just don't even know that that's true. I just think he needed work in the preseason, didn't get the work, and so he's having a bad couple weeks.
I think it's a real coincidence that his worst start to his Cleveland Browns, actually, probably the worst start to his career, is after his name got leaked in a trade, and after he went into business for himself, and then eventually lost the negotiations. I think that's a big gift to him. I'll give it to him because he's been here for 3 years now. But that's a lot of credit to give to somebody. Nobody but Nick Chubb deserves the. Nick Chubb wouldn't do that because Nick Chubb's been here for 7 years. Respectfully, I don't know we know Amari the same way we know Nick Chubb.
Yeah, but the suggestion you're making there is that he's actively not trying to perform.
No, I'm saying he is not in the best headspace. And through 2 games, I think you can say that. That drop, that is not an Amari Cooper drop. That is not one that we've seen in that moment.
None of them.
No, but specifically the third down. When you need him, he makes big plays in key moments. He did not there. That is incredibly troubling. Plus all the other stuff going on.
They got to get him checked back in then.